This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haidar, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is the full story. The next federal election could feature a debate on a radioactive topic. The coalition wants Australia to lift its ban on nuclear power, arguing that it should be part of the nation's energy mix. Opposition leader Peter Dutton says his plan would involve building as many as six nuclear plants on or near the sites of retiring coal stations.
My judgment is that we can't achieve the emissions reductions that we've signed up to globally if we don't have nuclear energy, the latest zero emissions technology, which is going to deliver cheaper prices, cleaner energy and more reliable energy.
The government's dismissed the idea, saying it's not a viable option.
So now he's saying we'll have big nuclear reactors. He's not saying where they're going to be. He's not saying who will pay for them. He's not saying how long it will take. It's thin air.
So is nuclear power the answer to our energy needs? And would you be okay with a reactor in your suburb or town? Today, Australia's climate wars go nuclear. It's Tuesday, the 19th of March.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, Graham.
Hey, Noah. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. Thanks for making the time. Graham Redfern is an environment reporter for Guardian Australia and writes about climate change and climate science. Over recent days, there have been claims and counterclaims about the viability of nuclear power being established in Australia. I'm hoping you'll be able to help us make sense of it all.
I will do my best. And yeah, there has been a political meltdown, if I'm using a bad pun there, or a chain reaction on nuclear here. Yeah, but there's been a lot of claims about the viability of nuclear. And I think in some ways, some of the places where it's been reported, there's not been much room for nuance. And if ever we need some nuance and a bit of detail and a bit of time to press the pause button and consider what we're talking about, it's this issue.
Mm. And we'll get into some of that detail shortly. But first, I was hoping, Graham, that you could start by giving us a little bit of a run through of the history of nuclear power in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, we have been debating this since sort of the 50s. There were actually some tender documents issued in 1969 by the coalition Prime Minister John Gorton to build a plant at Jervis Bay in New South Wales. That was shelved, actually, ironically, because it was going to be a lot more expensive than building coal-fired power plants. And then we had nuclear banned by the Howard government in 1998. And really, it's kind of just bubbled away under the surface. Nobody's really taken it all that seriously since then, until maybe a couple of years ago, the coalition really started to sort of start to throw nuclear in when they're kind of debating, how do we get to net zero in Australia?
Mm.
But we've also got bans in Victoria, in New South Wales, and in Queensland, as well as the federal ban.
So why was it banned, and why hasn't Australia gone down that path before?
The reason we haven't done it is because we've had other ways of producing power. We've had mountains of coal that we thought were cheap in terms of cost, but not cheap in terms of their effect on the environment and on the climate. And the reason that it was banned was John Howard, he wanted to build the small research reactor at Lucas Heights near Sydney and did a deal with the Greens that would allow that reactor to be built, but in return for a federal ban on nuclear reactors.
Okay, so let's turn now to what the coalition is proposing. Can you take us through some of the ideas that they've put out there?
Yeah, so what the coalition is proposing seems to have changed ever so slightly, or quite a lot. For several months, they were talking about something called small modular reactors, which in your head sounds like something quite compact that's there in a factory somewhere that you can go and buy and bring over and voila. They're not commercially available. The average size of a design of a small modular reactor is somewhere around 300 megawatts. That's pretty small. That's about 1/10 the size of Australia's biggest coal-fired power station. But then in the last month or two, we've started to hear the coalition say, well, yes, small modular reactors, but also we are also thinking about kind of your larger, more conventional, if you will, nuclear reactors. So that then kind of puts the coalition in a position where they can talk about most or all of the nuclear projects that are out there, those that really are only there on paper yet, and those that are being built or have been built in other countries.
So how much would it cost?
So the coalition's claim is that it's cheap, but actually there's no real way of knowing just how expensive nuclear would be in Australia. One, we've never done it before. Secondly, if we're talking about small modular reactors, they don't really exist as a commercial proposition yet. You can't go and buy one. And when you look at the conventional reactors that have been built in other parts of the world, a lot of them have gone through huge sort of not only schedule overruns, but budget overruns. Some of them are astronomic, actually. The new Hinkley C reactor that's being built in the UK in 2017, the cost was $34 billion. Now it's about $89 billion. In the United States, they're building a couple of plants in Augusta. They're 7 years late, and something like $25 billion Australian running over. So it's a really difficult number to pin down. But yet, the coalition just says it's cheap. And there are very few international energy experts that would agree that nuclear is cheap. It's amongst the most expensive power that you can generate. And so how much would it cost in Australia? How much is an extremely long, tangled, radioactive piece of string?
And the Energy and Climate Change Minister, Chris Bowen, says that the opposition's nuclear plan is absurd.
Australia has the best renewable resources in the world. It would be a massive economic own goal to give up utilising those resources and to go down this nuclear fantasy.
But it is happening.
So then how does the coalition's plan compare to Labor's plan to transition to renewables?
Labor wants to see 82% of the electricity being generated in Australia to be coming from renewables by 2030. The electricity sector is important because it's about 1/3 of Australia's entire carbon footprint, if you will. They are looking to expand an taxpayer underwriting scheme to encourage more renewables because most experts agree that we're actually behind on a target like that. There's the Rewiring the Nation policy, $20 billion to upgrade the transmission networks. Now, the Labor government has a climate target. Obviously, the target is a 43% cut in emissions by 2030. And net zero by 2050, but they are going to need to improve that target. It's there in the Paris Agreement. And so all of that tells you that we are moving really very, very quickly here to introduce renewables and all the other stuff that renewables are going to need to make it work in the grid. So that's things like batteries, like pumped hydro, and some of those generation plants, those solar farms and wind farms are not in the same places where the coal plants were. So you need new transmission lines. So that's where we're going. What we also know is that the Australian Energy Market Operator, they have a plan called the Integrated System Plan, Please Don't Fall Asleep. And that plan suggests that about 90% of the coal power in Australia's grid will be gone by 2035 and probably all of it by 2038 to 2040. And this gets us into one of the real big problems with the coalition's proposal. It's timing. How quickly could you get nuclear up in Australia if you could lift the bans and the state bans and agree all of the processes that you will need, create a new agency like a nuclear commission, for example, and then find someone to build them and then get them turned on? How long would that take? And that's where the problem is.
Graham, I'm glad you bring up timing, because I want to ask you about a key claim made by the coalition, and that is that Australia could have nuclear power up and running, operational within a decade. Is that feasible?
Nobody that I've spoke to thinks that it is. Why is that? Well, if we look at other countries around the world that have existing nuclear fleets, they're not building nuclear plants within a decade. If we were talking about small modular reactors, the most optimistic think that maybe the first commercial one anywhere might get up by sort of late 2029. So I think the coalition has been searching around for somewhere in the world where new nuclear plants have been built relatively quickly. And the place they've landed is the United Arab Emirates.
You look at the UAE, which is the newest entrant, and what they have done in just over a decade amidst COVID is to bring on four of these large-size reactors.
We've heard more than one coalition politician refer to the United Arab Emirates, including Shadow Energy Minister Ted O'Brien.
Now, countries around the world are doing this. Why? Because it proves you can actually get prices down, keep the lights on.
Now, in 2008... the UAE had never had nuclear plants before, and they said, yes, we've agreed a policy, we're going to have nuclear. And the big problem with comparing Australia to the United Arab Emirates, and I can maybe hear people shouting, it's an autocracy. They don't have to worry about a democratic process to get these things built. They don't have to worry too much about where they go. They're in a desert next to the ocean. We also don't know how much they cost because they have not released the costings or the contracts. The other thing we know about the UAE project is they commissioned a South Korean company called KEPCO to build those. And there was a report in the Korean Times a couple of years ago that there were about 17,000 workers brought into the UAE from places like Pakistan, Bangladesh, India, the Philippines, and some other developing countries, and also plus about 3,000 people from South Korea, including about 500 people, I think, from KEPCO. So there's a lot of reasons why the only place in the world that has sort of built them quite quickly is not a good comparison for Australia. We are essentially coming from a very low base here in Australia, and an awful lot of things would need to happen first before you could even start working on a plant. And by then, what does our grid look like? Well, it's dominated by renewables and by batteries and by pumped hydro. And would Australia then be willing to go down this path of potentially extremely expensive power plants when we've already got the form of electricity generation that most experts say is the cheapest, which is solar, wind, and then some batteries and some storage?
Next, will Australians support nuclear plants, and who would build them?
When our parents were our age, their lives looked a lot different than ours. You know, my parents owned a home and had two kids and a golden retriever by the time that they were 40. And my life just looked nothing like that.
Young Australians are the first generation to be worse off than our parents.
Home ownership is a distant dream.
We're the most educated generation, but drowning in debt.
Meanwhile, it's becoming harder and harder to find secure work.
And more often than not, we're told it's our fault.
But is it?
Who screwed millennials?
Not one person, not one place, not one bogeyman.
We're seeing a real shift in how we talk about economic instability and whose fault it is.
I'm Jane Lee.
And I'm Matilda Bosley. Find out who screwed millennials by subscribing to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts.
The series will be in your feeds from March 25th.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
So I would like to ask the question then. Peter Dutton says that there is zero chance that Australia will reach net zero emissions by 2050.
An adoption of the newest technology that has zero emissions is the only credible pathway we have to net zero by 2050.
Is that true?
Well, that's his view. Is it true? Impossible to say. But the Australian Energy Market Operator is working on and modelling future plans for the grid that don't have nuclear in it. Now, we know Labor's target is for 82% renewables by 2030. What about the rest? There are some energy experts that have said, oh, you know, maybe if we get into the year 2040, 2045, and somebody has built commercially available small modular reactors and you need your last kind of 5 or 10% of your energy to come from somewhere, then maybe nuclear is an option then. But is it like the centrepin of your energy policy? Well, that's what the coalition appears to be trying to say. And so this claim that you can't do it without nuclear, I think, is probably entirely untestable, but unlikely.
Mm. And so if the costs are unknown, they could take potentially decades to build. Why then is the coalition pursuing this line of argument?
That's the $90 billion question, if we think of the cost of Hinkley C. So we have to accept that this could be one of several things and all these things could exist at once. It could be a sincerely held belief that nuclear is a really good idea. And for some countries, it is a good idea. It's working. There's a lot of economies out there with nuclear power plants pumping away right now. But there have been some commentators, for example, Simon Holmes-Acourt, who's an energy analyst and also one of the backers of Climate 200. He says that nuclear is the energy policy that you have when you don't have an energy policy. And he points to other favourites of the coalition governments of the past, like clean coal, which wasn't a thing and isn't a thing, and carbon capture and storage, which has been this technology that has promised a lot and delivered almost nothing and has cost a lot of money. So when Ted O'Brien was asked about this, he said,
our view is we should not be closing our coal-fired power stations prematurely.
Prematurely was the word that he used. Well, what's premature in the context of a climate crisis or in the context of the Australian electricity system? So he's kind of hinting there that they might want to keep coal plants running for a bit longer. We know that some elements in the coalition are kind of reflexively opposed to anything that's associated with environmentalism. They don't like the greenies. You know, that's some elements of the coalition. So is this a wedge? The reason it's a wedge is because there are genuine environmentalists who really are passionate about nuclear. Nuclear is a zero emission or close to electricity source. And it's also true that it takes up less room than solar and wind. But does it work in the Australian context? Australia has some natural advantages here. Like we would think that we had a natural advantage with the amount of coal that we've got in Australia. We also have a natural advantage when it comes to the amount of space, the amount of sun, and the amount of wind that we get. So the argument is, why would you introduce a policy with very likely extremely high costs, which might not be available until the 2040s, if you're lucky, when we already have a solution that's kind of in front of us and is a technology that's being installed right now?
We keep hearing from Peter Dutton that in other comparable countries like the UK, the US and Canada, where there is nuclear, power prices are cheaper. Would nuclear power help bring down energy bills for Australian households?
The question of the cost of electricity, well, actually, that's in the hands of any government, right? We know that most nuclear projects, or almost all nuclear projects, require very, very large government subsidies, and they require governments to underwrite the process. And we've seen this in the UK. So, you know, governments can subsidise here and there to make things cheap. It's a really difficult thing to go, that country has nuclear, therefore that's the reason why it has cheap power. It's a claim that's made boldly, but has no real detail, no real context behind it. At the moment, it's sound bites, and we have to handle those like we handle radioactive waste really, really carefully.
And so, finally, do you think there would be a willingness amongst people, particularly those in regional communities, to have nuclear reactors in their backyards?
I think that's another real unknown. The coalition will point to opinion polls. There was a recent poll run by a news poll. Well, the way it was reported was that there was a powerful majority that backed the idea of putting small modular reactors on the sites of former coal-fired power stations. I would challenge that it actually found a strong majority. If you look at the poll results in a different way, the number of people who either strongly disapproved of that idea or just didn't know what it was about was actually higher than the people who strongly supported it. The coalition has said consistently that they would do this process only if they could get strong community buy-in. Could they do that? I don't know. And I think that this kind of goes to the issue of at Kimba in South Australia, where the community there were asked, do you want a medium-level reactive waste store in your community? And that was kind of imposed in a top-down way, and they said no. And even environmental groups have said, and this is the radioactive waste from Lucas Heights, even environmental groups have said, if you're going to go through a process like this, it needs to be a bottom-up process. The community needs to be absolutely wholeheartedly on board. I think there's so many questions that we need to answer first. And the first one is, could you lift the legal ban on nuclear? So there's an awful long way to go. There's another issue here that we haven't covered, but I think is also really, really important. And the question is, even if you could vault all those huge walls that are in front of nuclear, who would build them? Now, the countries that are building reactors right now are China. Would we be happy having China come and build some of our electricity generation? And Russia. Would we be happy having Russia come and build nuclear power plants? Now, there are a couple of other companies around that are doing this work. EDF, which is the company that's building the Hinkley C power plant in the UK. There are some countries that are talking about expanding their nuclear program. Would EDF want to come to a country that has never done it before when they could go to other countries and build other units? It's questionable. That really only leaves KEPCO, the South Korean company. And again, the same thing applies. When other countries have already got a regulatory regime and they've got some government backing for nuclear, would would a company like Capcoal come and want to build a nuclear reactor in Australia? One expert that I've spoke to who is also pro-nuclear, he believes that that is actually the biggest question is, even if you could get over all these other obstacles, who would build them?
Well, there are many unanswered questions there, Graham. Thank you so much for taking us through them and for helping untangle what is a very complex issue.
It is. Thanks, Noah.
That was Graham Redfern, environment reporter at Guardian Australia. You can find more of his work on theguardian.com. And we've linked to his latest piece on nuclear power on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alison Chan. Sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannan. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.